Hello, this is Lambert Dolphin speaking to you from Pomeroy Palace, a townhouse dating back to the 50s, situated in Silicon Valley in Santa Clara, California. And I am talking today to my dear, wonderful friend and Christian brother, Lawrence Hoppus, who lives quite a bit to the south in Simi Valley, California. I want to ask Lawrence today to please answer a bunch of questions about our friendship and his background and his specialty. So I'll ramble along with a series of questions. First, Lawrence, when did I first meet you and how? I think it was about 20 years ago. Is that correct?
Lambert, I am thrilled to be here with you, and what a joy to have you as a friend and a mentor and a partner all these years. I remember back, I was an engineer at Siemens, Rome, IBM in Silicon Valley between 1992 and about 2001. And in the middle of my work there, the internet got invented and you popped up there as one of the early pioneers. And something about your name and just the Holy Spirit inside of me leapt when I heard your name. I reached out to you via email, and I remember that first conversation. You told me you'd like to get to know me and talk to me about Jesus, and that was just right up my alley. And we started an email conversation, as you probably have with so many people, that was just genuine and from the heart and very responsive. This is just how I think hundreds or thousands of people around the world know you. And I have to think that would have been probably about 1997. The rest is history.
Second question. Do you remember visiting the Wednesday Brothers of Thunder at my home in Santa Clara back then?
Oh, Lambert, I remember that so well, like it was yesterday. You had just emailed me a brief invitation. If you're ever in the neighborhood, stop by on a Wednesday night. I honestly was expecting a room full of old dusty physics professors, not sure what to expect, but my friendship with you seemed so genuine at that point. I thought, you know, I'm going to hearken to the voice of the Spirit inside of me and just show up here. And what transpired was a room full of young, amazing men, all on fire for knowing God and being transparent with each other, and a tremendous amount of body life and the format of letting Jesus show up and be the Lord and lead and guide us all. Just kind of an open door policy, and so much friendship and people wandering in that were so loved and well known. And I was so enthralled to actually be a part of that in those early days, and that became a regular highlight of my week and my life, to show up there every Wednesday.
I remember that, and that's the point I learned about your interest in becoming a medical doctor. You were at San Jose State University at the time, and your company was phasing out its work in Silicon Valley, and you had training in engineering and computer science, as I remember.
You know, that was a huge time of transition, and I remember feeling super empty in my engineering career, even though I had reached a kind of mid-management responsibility level in one of the top companies in the Valley and in the world. And yet I was actually sneaking out on my lunch hour and my evenings to go attend night school. I'd had a bit of an awakening to purpose and went back to my alma mater, and they accepted me in as a pre-med student about a year after first meeting you.
You always were a rather intriguing person in the background of my life, but I never took you very seriously because of your interest in holistic healing and natural medicines. And I just poo-pooed all that stuff as a hard, cold, rational physicist. Can you tell me a little bit about your ambitions while you were in college about a possible career in medicine?
You know, when I was a child, I wanted to be a doctor, and I just remember being terrified of blood and not liking being around sick people. And so I felt like my engineering choice early in life was a much better choice for me. And yet within the engineering field, I kept rising up out of being a guy who would sit in a room and polish some lines of code or design a little circuit or something, into the higher layers of architectural and planning thought. And so God had a trajectory for me that was continuously removing me further and further away from the very field I was trying to work myself steadily into. I think at the Wednesday Night Brothers, something inside of me woke up and gave me the permission to just ask God what he wanted for me. And I remember at that time, I was on an accelerated program at San Jose State to get through my biology pre-med program and onto a MD through San Francisco State and UC Berkeley. And I had a doctor sponsoring me, and I was studying for my MCATs, and everything seemed like it was going to go down that path. And I know I process this a lot on Wednesday nights with you and the brothers, but eventually I think it got really clear to me that, first of all, I had two children. I wasn't going to go down a 10-year rabbit hole where I'd come out of it not really knowing my own family very well because my nose was in a book time, but also because there was something about the house that I was looking at there of medicine that didn't seem very whole to me and didn't seem, for whatever reason, in line with where God wanted to lead me. And so at that point, I remember very clearly being led out of that and abandon your plans and go to a new land, and I'm going to show you the way.
Where would you end up? You'd end up in the medical profession, buried in the woodwork somewhere.
I do feel like this has been the Lord's journey in my life, not my own. But I'm happy to talk about it, and I'm thrilled that I've gotten to be of some small assistance to you in your life and healing.
I believe you were able to meet some very key faculty members at San Jose State University, and then I think you mentored with a genuine medical doctor for some time. Was it in Los Gatos, California?
That's an interesting story. Around that time, I got rear-ended on Highway 101 North there in the Silicon Valley. The insurance company was very accommodating and said, please just tell us what you want for your car. Go to any doctor you want. And so I opened up the Yellow Pages, and I saw the biggest ad at the time was for Dr. R.O. Rudy Wayton in Los Gatos, California. What a chance, another chance meeting. He was a medical doctor, but also a naturopath, and had a Nobel Prize. He was there treating me for my neck injury from the accident and got interested in me and started talking to me about what I was doing in holistic healing. And he said, you need to be in here. And he actually brought me into his office, and I did a internship and residency with him, seeing his patients. And this is just, it's unheard of and very much out of the ordinary that God would move someone to do that. And that was the first of many, many incredible chance encounters I had in my career, where men of stature would take me under their wings and recognize something in me and nurture it in me, just as you did when we first met.
I remember very well the wonderful microscopic blood tests you did with your portable microscope, and the slides and presentations were absolutely amazing. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because it seems to me that analysis of the blood cells, both good and bad, is astonishing. And is that in vogue today?
You know, you can go your whole life and not really come upon your one thing. And somehow when I saw someone looking at blood under a microscope, I really came to understand that that is my one thing. And I immediately cashed in a part of my 401k plan, bought a microscope, and got some training with a series of different medical doctors and practitioners. And so by the time you met me, it was really you could actually get some blood off of the fingertip, put it underneath a microscope, look at it on the slide, and derive all kinds of fantastically useful information for healing from it. Now, in Leviticus, God says the life is in the blood, and he put it that way. There is something in blood that medically you could recognize as the immune system. It keeps us alive. Life and death are in there in the sense that there are also the immune challenges and the pathogens that get in and cause harm, and the allergens and the toxins that get in there that the body has to deal with. But that living layer of tissue, the blood, turns out to be the most interesting thing that you could possibly look at, and you can derive the richest field of information possible from it. Now, whether it's in vogue or not is really another whole question. There's not a medically authorized visual blood cell practice that's out there in the world right now. And yet you could imagine missionaries out in the bush in Africa somewhere, and somebody's laid low, and they would open up the case, pull out the microscope, discover some malaria or some kind of a other thing. And so this turns out to be an enormously rich field of information that people can derive a tremendous, tremendous amount of healing information from. It was interesting in reading the Bible, the Hebrew word for blessing. It's an interesting word, but it basically can be translated, may you have good blood. So whenever you bless somebody, and we know the blessing of Jesus' blood, that miraculous divine healing that happens through his shed blood in our lives and our remembrance of it. So no surprise, as a young man looking at blood through a microscope, I'm sure I must have interested you an awful lot.
You also were able to look at the retina of the eye and see signs of sickness and disease. And that's all completely unfamiliar territory for me as a physicist. So can you, as a biologist and a naturopath, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I can't really claim to be a biologist by training. I did my pre-med in the biology department. But then I struck out on a course of self-study and, again, was mentored by giants in the field, PhD microbiologists among them, who led me down a field of study that culminated in me teaching microbiology at the graduate level in a program that was a collaboration between Beijing University, Stanford University, and Five Branches Institute in Santa Cruz, and piloting not only the curriculum, but authoring the textbook for the course. And so God led me down a path where I got to bring a lot of what you could consider East-West information together, learning Oriental medicine, and they had Chinese eye-reading techniques from their traditions, and American Indians had eye-reading techniques as well. And so a brilliant man took the eye-reading techniques from the East side and the West side and married those together with a lot of clinical trials and created an eye-reading science that I feel is personally very useful. It's kind of like having a house where you look into different windows. As the human body is expressing itself in these different ways, there are different windows that it expresses itself through, and the eyes and the blood are two very, very good and complementary systems to look at. And that was an amazing added thing for me as a naturopath, to be able to read new languages of the body through the lamp of the eye. And I do want to say that none of us can really say that we're operating at more than a fraction of the total potential that we have, not physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. And the ability of a naturopath to be able to look in on systems of the body that are suboptimal, that are they're not maybe in a full medical breakdown yet, there may be nothing medically wrong, and yet these accounts could be getting close to being overdrawn. They can be getting pretty low. And so understanding how to read the various status of the different natural system accounts of the human body through the eyes and the blood, and then ultimately learning how to put deposits into those accounts has enabled me to get to the place where I can work with people to help them to charge themselves up to their higher potential. And that enables the love they have to give, the ministry opportunities that they have, and the quality of life that they get to live. This is probably the most rewarding aspect of the work that I do.
You were always watching over me as a friend on the fringes, as a member of the Wednesday Brothers of Thunder and a frequent visitor, but I never listened to you seriously. I really didn't. And that was my undoing, because over the years I was very careless about what I ate, what kind of pills I put into my system. I took several painkillers, Ultram, I remember. And then about 12 years ago, I injured myself in a fall out in the lava fields in New Mexico, and my left knee was in considerable pain, so I went to my regular doctor at El Camino Hospital, I think it was, and he prescribed OxyContin, small 20 milligram dose, and that cured the pain. Gradually, however, the pain came back and the arthritis showed up, and the doctor considered doing joint replacement surgery on all my joints, and my general practitioner care physician, Dr. John Made, poo-pooed that idea. He didn't want all that surgery. But I ended up on 160 milligrams of OxyContin per day after 10 years, not knowing that I was addicted and not knowing that my mind was being dumbed down and my memory was fading away and my awareness of the real world was dimming. And I understand that opiate and heroin addiction is huge in our society today. And a lot of people die per day. And I remember once you suggested that I might go through an OxyContin recovery program in Santa Barbara, which would have meant taking a couple of weeks off from work at least. And then I found out that getting off of opiates is no easy matter. And in fact, subsequently, I've learned a great deal about OxyContin addiction. There's an article on my website about my recovery. But that's getting ahead of things. Can you next talk a little bit about the crash that I experienced in June of 2017 when suddenly I blacked out?
You know, there's so much to share on this topic, and I think when you were on the Oxy, you were every bit yourself. You were every bit the Lord's man. You were every bit doing ministry. And yet I do remember that you had a lot of side effects, a lot of things that you weren't happy with. And I remember that talking about the detox facility. I remember that well. God had given me a sort of a special appreciation for you and just the ministry that you did in my own life, but also the real active ministry I saw in the lives of so many others. And like so many others, I came to adore that. And I remember just showing up for you every day and wondering what I could do to make your life a little bit better. And oftentimes it would be just something simple. You know, certainly I remember very well just caring deeply about you and your wellness, and over the years suggesting, oh, you might do this or you might do that. You had some vascular problems, and that had led to some breakdowns, and of course there was pain in your knees that you spoke about often, and the gallbladder loss episode. And I just remember coming up in your room one day, probably around 2009, and I remember your spirit leaping and mine, and we just both said, it's good to be together in the flesh. Let's get working on a healing program. And you were just down and out and willing to just listen and do anything. And so we began monthly programs where you would take different vitamins and minerals and dietary and lifestyle things, and a couple of different supplements that were supportive and helpful. And I think during that time, we got some successes, big wins, and we got into kind of a daily conversation sometimes over text. And yet that we realized, I think both of us, that this Oxy thing was just too big. I do remember saying, "Oh, Lambert, you need 2 weeks to go to a recovery place," and you just deciding that was just too big of a chunk to bite off at that time. But over the years, that ended up just taking too big of a toll on you. And I don't think it's any surprise that eventually things started to really go downhill for you.
Tom McGowan got me down to the ER, took me 2 temps to get in. And back then, I had, being a single man, I had decided I ought to leave my property to somebody, and I couldn't trust anybody around here to save anything. It would all go in the dumpster when I died, and I'm not a young man anymore. So some time ago, I think without even asking you, I made a living will and trust, notarized it, and sent it out, and put it in my strongbox. But anyhow, in June 2017, when I crashed and I'm at death's door, you came rushing up to my rescue. The rest is history, and I'd like to talk about that.
Lambert, you had made me your durable power of attorney and asked me to enforce your will if you ever became incapacitated, and that's the kind of forethought that you had, and I remember being surprised, but just willing to come and do that for you as a friend and a person I loved. And there was a stream of consciousness text from you, and I thought, oh, that's a little bit odd. And then the next thing I knew, you were sending me the same picture over and over again, and you just kind of typed some garbled text that looked like it was just a stream of noise. Got in my car and headed up to see you. We had just been with you the week before, my daughter Kara and her friend, her boyfriend Christian, and now fiance, and it was so precipitous, very, very sudden decline.
I was delirious for several weeks, and you and others know the blow-by-blow story of my ingesting food and developing pneumonia and coming to the point where I nearly died. And my own dear, wonderful physician, Dr. Madej, said we're losing him. And at that point, you rallied a bunch of my friends together and you prayed.
It was probably in the middle of the day. Kara and Christian and I were with you in the hospital room, and you had difficulty with swallowing and aspirated some food, and then you vomited a little bit, and then you aspirated the vomit, and that was a very treacherous point, turning point. I ended up sort of insisting that they come and attend to you and that your life was in danger, and as a result of that, your doctor elevated you up to the intensive care unit, and from there you got moved to the critical care unit. Prior to that, you'd been on Flagyl and very, very strong intravenous antibiotics, and were having a lot of inflammation and difficulty in your digestive tract. But at this point, with the lungs then compromised, you were on a respirator and kind of down and out. And that is when really, at that point, decisions had to be made, and certainly I went to your doctor, and he really thought you had maybe a very, very slim chance of recovery. And so every day, we just kind of hung on and prayed. I got your mailing list and started writing out to all of your friends and asking them to pray. And you have very, very many friends on your mailing list, and a lot of them are good prayers. And so you quickly turned around, although you blipped up into the critical care for a little bit, within a matter of just days, they went from talking about needing to do emergency abdominal surgery.
And I should have died, but I didn't. So I'd like to go into that, the subsequent long, slow recovery, but there's a whole lot of blank stuff here. Because what you know about and I don't know about is all those missing weeks at the hospital in intensive care and critical care. And with you watching over me day and night and you putting my affairs in order, because this is an amazing story to be recalling after the fact, and you were there. So if you would talk about that, maybe that's enough, more than enough for that first message.
Well, gosh, Lambert, you know, we'd have to write a book, and I'm looking forward to delving in deeper with you on all of this. Long and short, ended up just could not find a real diagnosis for what was going on with you. I remember a day, and I think you probably do too, where they decided that they needed to do a brain scan because you were having some temporary inabilities to communicate well. They didn't know what to call it or what it was. They wanted to do a deeper scan, but because of the pacemaker that you had, they couldn't do that. They did get you into a CAT scan, and based on that, they saw some vascular problem. There was breakdown in the periphery of the circulatory system in the brain. And this the time, the doctors didn't actually know what was going on with you. And it was, I think, humbling and frustrating because all of your friends were asking me, and we just didn't know what, there was nothing I knew to say to them. We held on and we prayed. And day by day, you traveled on the most amazing journey of spirit that anyone can imagine. That you were lucid and calm, but the things that you were speaking to people, they were more in the spirit and less in the body. And so not everybody could understand you very well. I think about a half a dozen friends could come and you'd recognize them and converse well with them. And the rest of the people, they just said, "Gee, I don't understand him. I don't know what he's talking about." You hung in there and walked in heaven with the Lord in His fields and came back. And that's something that I do think a book needs to be written about it, because it's just it was too amazing to go into.
We can do videos if you want, but this seemed easy to get us started. Thank you, and God bless you, bro.
Yeah, I do. I want to do this. I want to talk more about your journey and my observations of it. And I'm thrilled to be able to have been a witness to what transpired, and looking forward to checking in with you more on it in a subsequent exchange.